All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's going on?
Today, we're going to break down the stacked UFC 295 card, which was really awesome to watch. And then we're going to talk a little bit about next week's card, Brendan Allen versus Paul Craig. Let's do it. All right. What an event, man. Holy shit. I mean, for me, I think that was probably the card of the year. I mean, I know recency bias is definitely a thing, but
It's hard to argue against it, man. Every fight ended before the third round. And I mean, I don't think the total fight time probably added up to two rounds.
Yeah. It's crazy, dude. I mean, and, you know, the main card was awesome. It was all finishes, like you said. All of them were, you know, really fun fights to watch. The prelims were awesome, too, man. The prelims were bangers. Like, that Nazim Sadikov fight was awesome. The Lupi Godinez fight was pretty fun. Mateusz Rubecki got that quick finish. Jared Gordon got that finish. There's a lot of good fights on here. The Joshua Van fight was really fun earlier in the card. Jamal Emmers got that quick knockout. I mean, honestly, bro, I think this is card of the year for me.
Yeah. Amongst a year full of card of the year candidates. So, you know, let's put that, you know, in perspective that this has been a year of...
It's been a good year.
Yeah, great cards. Unexpectedly great cards, too. Similar to this one. Let's go ahead and get into it because I know you want to talk about that main event. You were losing your mind. Tom Aspinall is the new interim heavyweight champion.
Oh, let's get to let's talk about the Pereira Prochazka fight first. So I was picking Jiří on the pod, the preview pod, but honestly, this was as close to a 50-50 fight as you could put together. I mean, this and the co-main event were 50-50 fights in my eyes. But Pereira was able to get it done. I mean, I think the stoppage was a little bit early in that second round. Pereira had just gotten wobbled from Prochazka. You know, Prochazka hit him like with a good shifting right hand and kind of got a little reckless against the fence when he had Pereira against the fence. But Pereira was able to land that left hook that he's known for. And then he threw those anti-wrestling elbows that we used to see a lot more about 5 or 6 years ago. And, Prochazka eventually fell backwards into mount. And, you know, I understand stopping the fight there. But I would have loved to see, you know, a couple more shots from that position, because it did look like to me that Prochazka was starting to sneak out the back door and might have even ended up on top in that position. We've seen Prochazka come back from some really bad knockdowns. You know, he even told us that he got knocked out in the Reyes fight by an upkick. And immediately after he gets hit with that upkick, he passes the guard. So the dude clearly has a very strong sense of like that autopilot, you know, that when fighters get hurt and they go on autopilot, Prochazka lives there, you know? So I think a little bit early for me, but regardless, great performance from Pereira. He landed those good leg kicks in the first round that really took a lot out of Prochazka. I thought it would be a factor in the fight, but I didn't expect it to bother him as much as it did. And then, you know, Prochazka answered with that takedown towards the end of the first round. It was a solid fight. It was a competitive fight. I would have loved to have seen it go for another couple rounds or so. But, you know, for what it was awesome. And we got a new light heavyweight champ, man, Alex Pereira, two-time champion now.
I thought it was an early stoppage for a little bit until and good on Prochazka. He took it like a man, said I was out. It was a good stoppage, you know.
Yeah, he's a class act.
He's a class act. And I saw it from another angle, and he was out. And I get like maybe wanting to see a little bit of a follow-up, but that's a dangerous situation to put a human being in after you just like got flash knocked out, and then all of a sudden you have Alex Pereira on top of you in mount, you know, with momentum coming down. I mean, look at that stare. Do you want that waking up from a flash knockout?
Welcomes that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure he does, but it's one of those things where I would love to see. I wouldn't mind seeing this matchup again in a year or two. You know, maybe Prochazka doesn't go to the back of the line, but gets two or three fights. You know, knocks out some high level guys, and then comes back at Pereira trying to get that light heavyweight title again in a rematch. I would welcome that rematch.
Yeah, 100%.
If I just to get that stare down, dude, it is haunting me. Like,
yeah, it was insane, dude. It was so intense. I mean, both guys are super intense as human beings, and you could tell they had a lot of respect for each other in there, which I really love to see. You know, this whole card was filled with competitors, not rivals. You know. And I really like that about this sport, especially when it all comes together like that. So it was an awesome card. And that main event was very nerve wracking, you know, leading up to the finish and leading up the stare down, the walk out, everything about it. It was just like, oh, my God, it felt like a really big title fight. You know what I mean?
It felt like we were back in gladiator days, the Coliseum days.
Yeah,
and we were watching two gladiators walk to the center knowing that one of them is leaving. Like, it was chilling. It really was.
Yeah. Great performance from Pereira. He kept it tight, you know, did what we expected him to do by being the more technical and, you know, sharper fighter on the middle of those exchanges. Prochazka was able to, you know, land some good stuff with his unorthodox technique, but Pereira's leg kicks and tight left hook, right hand against the fence was what ultimately won him the fight, you know. So good job on Pereira. I think, where do you go from here? You know, I mean, for me, it has to be Jamahal Hill. You know, if the champion relinquishes his belt, he deserves a chance to get it back. So that's a fight that makes sense to me. I know Pereira had called out Adesanya in the post-fight interview, but Adesanya's saying that he wants to stay away from the sport until like 2027, which, you know, that's his right. It's up to him what he wants to do. You know what I mean? I think he needs some time off if he's saying stuff like that. So I'd like to see Pereira fight Jamahal Hill. And then in the meantime, they're doing Jan Blachowicz versus Alexander Rakic. And I think the winner of that fight should probably get the next title shot after Jamahal Hill gets his say, you know.
It would just be nice to see somebody be able to hold the belt for, you know, longer than one or two fights. This division seems to have been cursed since John Jones left it. And it would be nice to see someone come in there. And it's nice for the action. You know, I feel like, you know, I'm sure I would complain about it just the other way if there was a long reigning champion. I'm like, oh man, someone come in, bring. But having something nice and median in there, having someone that can hold the belt for a while and not restore some type of legitimacy. Like, they're not great fighters, but, you know, it's hard to talk about the weight class you know, without that definitive champion. Like, oh man, look how much they're progressing. You know, he's pushing the game. Now it just seems like a bunch of guys that can't hold the throne.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many different styles at the top at light heavyweight right now. You know, you've got like the more technical reserved kickboxers like Blachowicz and Pereira versus like the wild men and Jamahal Hill and Jiří Prochazka. Then you've even got that brand of like people that are just trying to win the fight. They don't care if it's boring or exciting or not. And Alexander Rakic and Magomed Ankalaev. So there's a lot of different styles there at the top. I do think somebody like Ankalaev would give Pereira a lot of trouble. I also think that the UFC is going to keep him away from him as far as they can, or, you know, as much as they can, because Ankalaev is not an exciting fighter, and he's also he doesn't speak English. He's not very marketable, you know? So I expect them to do the rematch with Johnny Walker and Ankalaev, because that, no contest or whatever, that was fucking bullshit. That fight and the Blachowicz versus Rakic fight should shake out some of the division, while Jamahal Hill and Pereira, face each other off. Probably going to be like early next year, I'd imagine, maybe like April or March. We'll see what happens, you know. Let's get down to the rest of the card. There's a lot of other really cool shit that happened here. Number one on my list, Tom Aspinall getting the belt in 1 minute. Right? 1 minute and 9 seconds, something like that. Yeah, against Sergey Pavlovich. Holy shit, dude. Like, I was fucking losing my mind when I was watching this. I literally was about to cry. Like, it was so awesome. I mean, coming on 2 weeks' notice for Tom Aspinall against, and what he says and what I think is the scariest heavyweight in the division right now, Sergey Pavlovich, who was on like a 6-fight first round knockout streak. It was a UFC record. Tom Aspinall came out and fucking danced with him and took him out of there in a minute. It was insane, dude. Like, you know, we've seen Pavlovich get hit before from Tuivasa. He got hit a couple times, or I'm sorry, not Tuivasa. Lewis hit him a couple times. Tuivasa, he kind of just steamrolled. But, you know, he took those shots well. But Aspinall, so light on his feet, creating a bunch of different angles that, you know, Pavlovich, who kind of just tends to come in on a straight line, didn't see. and he was able to land that right hand on the temple and just fucking put the guy down, man. It was awesome, dude. I was so pumped. I thought that Aspinall was going to have to, like, you know, fight a very smart fight, like fight on the outside, take him down, you know, land some leg kicks, you know, use his distance, use his range, use his mobility. He did use that distance and that mobility and that range a little bit in the beginning just to stay away from the big shots of Pavlovich. Pavlovich did land a good right hand early in the fight. And you see Aspinall, like, do, like, this little head movement thing where he dipped and moved out to the side a bit, you know, rolled with the punch a bit, and kind of gave Sergey pause to engage again. And then he was able to circle out and, you know, use that head movement and that footwork to buy him some time while he set up his money shot at that right hand across the temple. Man, it was fucking awesome, dude. I'm so happy for the guy. 2 weeks notice, and now he's the UFC heavyweight champion. And you got to imagine that Jones and Stipe, whoever wins that fight, regardless of who wins that fight, they're both going to retire afterwards. They both talked about it. So in all, you know, merit and everything, Tom Aspinall is the heavyweight champion right now. And I love the guy, so I'm really happy to see him in that spot.
Yeah, I don't know if they want any part of Tom Aspinall.
Yeah, no, I don't think Stipe or Jones would want to fight that guy. You know, he's a tough matchup.
I would be interested to see. You know, I think Jones would be able to possibly get past him, especially if he employs a grappling heavy game plan. Dude, I'd love to see it. I really would. You know, I hope that they make that, but you know, I'm not holding my breath for it. You know, if you know, like you said, for all intents and purposes, Tom Aspinall is the heavyweight champion. So yeah. Good on him, man. I'm happy for him. I really am. Especially, I was reading the story about his dad quitting his job just to train him full time and then get that moment. That's cool, dude. I always love seeing stuff like that.
Yeah, their relationship is really special. He's talked about it a lot on the embeddeds and countdowns and stuff. He talks about how his dad is in the room for every one of his training sessions and showed up to every one of his fights. And, you know, it's awesome to see that kind of support. You know what I mean? As far as the Jones fight goes, if it does happen, excuse me, I got to sneeze. If the Jones fight does happen, I do think it's a tough matchup for John Jones. I think it's probably the hardest matchup for Jones in this weight class. With Pavlovich, it was like, you know, we've seen Pavlovich get taken down from the clinch before by Alistair Overeem, and that's kind of where John Jones butters his bread, is clinch takedowns. So there's a real path to victory for him there. But Aspinall is so good on the ground. He hits really hard, as we saw against Pavlovich. He's fast. He's quick on his feet. I think the only way that Jones could really... you know, have some real success in that fight is if he's able to draw it out and get to the championship rounds, you know. And I don't think he wants that. I don't think he wants to be in a war right now at the stage of his career. I think he wants to beat Stipe Miocic and, you know, sail off into the sunset, you know. It's his right to, you know. He's had a long career, beat a lot of guys. I don't like the guy personally. I used to be a big fan until he got into all these extracurricular activities. But Aspinall is my guy, you know what I'm saying? I'm really really proud of him, seeing where he came from and, you know, how far he's come in this division. I mean, it's not like this dude's undefeated either, you know. He has a couple losses on his record, that knee injury and then some early ones in his career, but effectively he hasn't lost in the UFC yet, really. I mean, that injury was kind of an accident, you know. And every other fight he smokes his opponent, you know. The longest fight he's ever had was the second round, and it was like 1 minute into the second round. So I expect him to stay at the top for a bit. You know, he can come back quick after this. I don't know. They're probably going to have to shelf him while they do the Stipe versus Jones fight, which is just fucking holding up the division. You know what I mean? But then again, there's not really that many, you know, high button contenders that are chomping at the bit for a title shot right now. You know, I mean, I guess you can do Ciryl Gane. Maybe they do Gane versus Almeida while they wait for Jones and Miocic. And then, Aspinall will fight the winner of Gane versus Almeida, because I expect Miocic and Jones to retire, like we said. But yeah, either way, good problems to have, man. Tom Aspinall, I expect him to be an active champion if there's fights for him, and I expect him to get people out of there quickly, which, you know, clearly he showed that. He has the lowest average fight time in UFC history, shortest average fight time, and number two was Sergey. So that record didn't change. It's still the same, you know. Tom Aspinall shortest average fight time in UFC history, and new heavyweight champion, dude. The guy's fucking beast. I'm so happy for him. Let's go down the rest of the card. There was some other really crazy fights on here. Jessica Andrade put an absolute beat down on Mackenzie Dern, dude. I didn't expect this. Did you get a chance to see this one?
Yeah, I didn't expect that either. I was happy to see Andrade get back, but it was painful to watch Dern have that much of a drop off from her last fight to this one. It was very, very unexpected. I can't tell if Andrade just showed up or Mackenzie Dern didn't, or, you know, both happened. But
combination of both, yeah.
Yeah, dude, I like this. I like seeing Andrade back for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I love Andrade. I've been a fan of her for years, you know, so I'm happy to see her get back in the winning column. As far as Dern goes, I read after the fight that she actually, you know, in that Angela Hill fight, we were all like, holy shit, like, she can strike now. She had brought in Jason Perillo for that fight, and they were training together, and it looked like she got a lot of good work out of Jason Perillo. You know, he's like a very esteemed boxing coach in the MMA community, worked with like Michael Bisping and Chito Vera and a lot of these guys who are known for their good combinations and their striking. Dern looked like a great fighter in that last fight, and apparently she dropped Perillo for this camp, so... certainly showed, I thought, at least in the striking exchanges, she looked like her old self, where she was kind of lost on the feet, you know, throwing with her eyes closed and stuff like that. On paper, I was thinking like, this is a really hard fight for Andrade, because Dern hits hard. She's, you know, really tough. We've seen her take some big shots before, and if the fight goes to the ground, she's a fucking, you know, jiu-jitsu world champion. So Andrade, in my opinion, before the fight, I was thinking that if she's going to win, she's going to have to, like, you know, kind of make it ugly, get inside and, you know, punch her with her hooks and, you know, kind of like make it a brawl. And if not that, like, fight her how she fought Lauren Murphy, where she kind of stayed on the outside, tagged her with heavy shots and leg kicks, and just make it, you know, put the damage on Dern. And she was able to kind of do a combination of those things, staying in that medium range and just, you know, hammering Dern with hooks and straights and leg kicks. And she was all over her, you know. And by the time that she hurt Dern, I think it was with a left hook or a right hand early in the or like midway through the first round, you know, you could see Dern's like soul leave her body. And after that, it was just downhill. It was just momentum was rolling for Andrade. She stayed on her. Dern like went for a takedown attempt and got shrugged off. This is after that hip toss that she lands pretty early in the fight, where Andrade got out of there. So huge win for Andrade. Honestly, in retrospect, it's kind of hard to, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but Andrade has that huge power that Dern hasn't really felt yet at this weight class, and she gets hit a lot. So we probably should have seen this coming a little bit. But that being said, I'm happy to be wrong here, because I really like seeing Andrade get back in the win column. You know, she's been on a tough skid lately, so she needed that one behind her, you know. As for Dern, I'm not sure where she goes from here. Andrade as well. I'm not sure where either girl goes from here, because, you know, I was thinking if Dern wins this fight, they give her a title shot. I don't think you can say the same for Andrade, considering that she's, you know, 1-3 in her last four. So she'll probably have to fight somebody, you know, in the middle of the division, maybe do a rematch with Amanda Lemos or fight somebody like that. Maybe Marina Rodriguez, something like that. You know, I think that might be a good fight for her. Dern should take some time off for sure. You know, that was a beatdown, and I'm sure mentally it's going to be tough for her to come back from that one. But yeah, you know, regardless, awesome performance from Andrade, and another TKO finish for her at strawweight. And then the next fight that happened was the Benoit St. Denis fight. And this was a real treat, man. Like, as short as this fight lasted, I think it was only like 90 seconds or so, it was really fun to watch. So I don't know. Did you catch this one, Jordan?
The tail end of it.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, so they come out really hot. You know, for people who aren't aware, Matt Frivola, heavy, heavy hands, great grappling as well. But a little bit chinny. I think that's his big undoing is his durability. Benoit St. Denis, on the other hand, super durable, hits hard, great grappling, and one of my favorite MMA writers and analysts, Jack Slack, said about him that he mixes the sublime and the ridiculous very well. So Benoit St. Denis will come out and throw some stupid shit, like, you know, a double front kick or like, or rather a switch front kick, I should say, or, you know, like a jump for a guillotine like he did in this fight. And then 30 seconds later, hit the most beautiful sweep you've ever seen in an MMA fight, or catch somebody leaning with a perfect head kick like he did, you know? So first round comes out super hot, both guys. Frivola gets hit pretty hard with a straight left, I think, from Benoit Saint-Denis, and jumps in for a takedown attempt to mitigate. And then Benoit Saint-Denis jumps on a guillotine. Frivola ends up on top and gets to the half guard. And Benoit Saint-Denis hits his beautiful butterfly sweep, textbook butterfly sweep, gets back on top. They end up getting back to the feet against the cage. And Matt Frivola does this like really exaggerated skipping out from the side and, you know, trying to angle out and, you know, re-engage in better terms. And Benoit Saint-Denis just straight up runs past, like runs across the cage and throws that head kick like a fucking football punter. You know what I mean? And took his head off, dude. It was fucking awesome. I don't think he landed any follow-up shots. I don't think he needed to. That run-up high kick was more than enough to get him out of there. And huge victory for Benoit Saint-Denis in a first-round knockout. In a fight that people had, I think it was a pick-em, or Benoit Saint-Denis was a slight favorite, but he fucking smoked him in like 90 seconds. So great performance from Benoit Saint-Denis. And I'm really excited to see where this guy goes from here, because I think he's got awesome tools in this division. I'd like to see him fight somebody like Armand Tsarukian, or, you know, Fiziev or Gamrot, one of these like big names in the division, these new guys. I don't know if it's going to happen. There's just so many fighters at lightweight right now. It's hard to give him that kind of top 10 shot. So maybe they give him somebody like Drew Dober, or, you know, somebody. Fight. Yeah, I think that'd be an awesome fight, you know, Drew Dober, or somebody like in that like 10 to 15 range. You know what I mean? Dan Hooker and Bobby Green are fighting each other, but, you know, we'll figure it out. He's got good problems to have in this division. The dude's been putting away people. Super impressive. He seems to have a very well-rounded game. And for me, is definitely the best fighter to come out of France as far as a well-rounded game goes. I mean, Cyril Gane is an amazing fighter, but he clearly doesn't have the grappling that Benoit Saint-Denis has. So for me, he's the best fighter to come out of France right now. So I'd like to see him continue to grow in this division. I think he will. And then my boy Diego Lopez got it done, bro. What did I say? You know what I mean? Another 90-second knockout.
Man, he let me down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Pat Sabatini's a beast. You know what I mean? The dude's a great grappler. And if he gets it to that realm, it's very hard to beat him. You know what I mean? The dude stays on people like glue. But I thought that, you know, his durability has always been a problem, Pat Sabatini. And I thought that Diego Lopez would be able to exploit that a bit. And he certainly was. You know, the dude came out super hot. Once he starts to land on you, Diego Lopez, he just steamrolls people. You know what I mean? He's very much a front runner. Maybe not front runner. That's probably not the best way to describe him, but he's definitely a finisher. You know, if he smells the blood, he's going to go for it. And Sabatini, they got in a couple grappling exchanges, and Lopez holds his own in the grappling. You know what I mean? He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's Alexa Grasso's jiu-jitsu coach, and, you know, she's got stellar jiu-jitsu, so you see where it comes from. He was able to fend off those attempts from Sabatini and just put the beat down on him, man, and fucking get him out of there early. So that was another one that I picked pretty accurately on the preview pod, which I'm very happy to see. Diego Lopez cashed in as an underdog, and if you got him by knockout, I think it was like plus 400, something ridiculous. So, you know, great pick there. And again, like, super exciting fighter. I'm really excited to see where he goes here at featherweight. Now he's on a 2-fight first round finish streak, so I expect him to get another a big ticket in his next fight. You know, maybe they give him like Joe Anderson Brito or something like that. Somebody, one of these featherweights that are super exciting. I think that'd be a great fight. But yeah. Going down the card, there was a few other solid ones. Steve Ersig and Alessandro Costa. This fight was really exciting. It was, you know, back and forth. Ersig won the first round. Costa won the second. It looked like he was going to finish him. And then Ersig came back and won the third. So pretty clear 29-28 for me. Judges all had it that way as well. It was another good thing about this card is that the judges didn't fuck anything up. The few times that the fight did go to the judges.
It's hard to fuck up a score when everybody gets knocked out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the few times that it did go to decision, all the right winners won, I thought, in my opinion. But then you talk about this next fight, and they tried to fuck it up. the Lupita Godinez Tabitha Ricci fight was a split decision for God knows what reason. One of the judges gave it 30-27 to Tabitha Ricci, which was absolutely asinine, you know, up there with the Marlon Vera versus Corey Sandhagen decision, in my opinion. That being said, I mean, you know, it was a close fight. It was a competitive fight, but the moments that Ricci had were few and far between. And the one big moment that she had was actually a clash of heads. It wasn't a punch, you know. So Lupita was winning the whole fight. She was winning the first like 4.5 minutes of the first round. She dropped Ricci earlier in that round, and then she goes for a takedown attempt, and Ricci lands a straight while she's shooting, and it looks like a really bad knockdown, but she really just caught her off balance. It was a great time shot from Ricci. Don't get me wrong, you know what I mean. Not taking anything away from the lady, but Lupita wasn't compromised as much as she looked. Second round, same deal. Lupita's winning the entire round, beating her up in the boxing exchanges, stopping her takedown attempts, which is Ricci's bread and butter, is her wrestling and grappling. And then towards the end of the round, they, you know, go for an exchange, and Lupita swings her head into Ricci's and gets dropped from a clash of heads. Very similar to what we saw with Volkanovski versus Yair Rodriguez, I think it was. Yeah, like it looked like a knockdown. The crowd goes crazy. I mean, I saw it in real time. That was a clash of heads, but I have the angles. You know what I mean? We're watching it from home. Like, so the crowd doesn't see that. The judges don't see that. I guess they might have thought that it was a knockdown for Ricci because a lot of the judges gave her that round. But third round, Lupita left all doubts aside and, you know, beat the piss out of her again for the whole round. Didn't have any scary moment at the end of that round. So in my eyes, it was, as you know, 30-27, maybe you could argue 29-28 for Lupita. But I definitely thought that she won. And then for Ricci, you know, one of the judges gave her all three rounds, which was absolutely ridiculous. But regardless, it was a very exciting fight. Lupita keeps her winning ways going. Super competitive fight, but I thought it was a clear winner. Mateusz Rebecki finished Roosevelt Roberts in like a couple minutes like he was supposed to. Roosevelt Roberts came in on short notice. He's fighting a very talented grappler, Mateusz Rebecki. So no shame in losing that fight, you know. I thought that Roosevelt would have a bit more success on the feet. The few exchanges on the feet, Mateusz was able to land some good body kicks and, you know, kind of negate that reach advantage from Roosevelt. But that dude is huge, man. Rebecki is massive. He looks like he's fucking a middleweight and he's fighting at lightweight. I don't know how he gets down to 155, but it's going to be tough for people to get past that, you know, past the size and past the grappling, you know. So he's another fighter to watch out for in this division. Maybe they give him Matt Frivola after Matt Frivola heals up. You know, I think that'd be an interesting matchup. And then this is the fight of the night. Fucking amazing fight, man. Nazim Sadikov versus Vyacheslav Borshev. I love both these guys. I've been following them since they've made their, you know, Contender Series fights and their debuts. For Nazim, he was straight to the UFC. For Borshev, it was through the Contender Series. Nazim has a very well-rounded game. Both guys have been kickboxers before. They both had professional kickboxing fights, but Nazim definitely has the more well-rounded game in MMA. He's a great grappler. He used that a lot in his Cage Fury fights. And in this fight, he was able to... he wasn't able to get the grappling off as much as I thought he would, you know? Borshev showed massive improvements in his takedown defense. In the preview pod, I was telling everybody that, you know, if you even look at the guy's hips, he'll fall over. And that's what it was for his first, you know, four or five fights in the UFC. And now, against Nazim, he was able to spot the takedown attempts a lot quicker. He was able to get the underhooks, keep his hips back, and he was able to keep the fight on the feet for the most part, you know? Nazim was able to get takedown in the third round and in the second round. But that was when he had Borshev very compromised from huge punches and kicks that he was throwing in that second round, man. I don't know how he stayed in there. That guy is tough as nails. There was at one point where he threw this like step-up front kick, very similar to the one that Chandler hit Ferguson with, and Borshev just fucking eats it like a tic-tac and circles out. It was fucking insane, dude. Like, it was an amazing fight. First round, Borshev for sure. He landed some good shots in that round. I was very worried about Nazim. Second round, Nazim had a huge round, 10-8, easy, beat him pillar to post that whole round, took him down, beat him up on the ground, beat him up on the feet, knocked him down on the feet. Probably should have just stood up when he was in that ground position. It didn't seem like Borshev had his legs underneath him. And I think, Nazem could have probably got the finish if he stayed on the feet and, you know, just put it on him. But that's obviously easier said than done when you're in there and you know that Borshev is known for having a bad ground game. Why not try to finish on the ground, right? Like, similar to what Volkanovski did to Yair. And then the third round comes out and Sadikov seemed like he'd kind of, you know, expended a lot of energy in that second round trying to get the kill. And Borshov just landed, you know, I don't know. This guy is so fucking tough, dude. He came back from that, like, near finish in the second round and put on a great performance in that third round, outstriking Sadikov 2-1. I think he landed, like, 55 strikes to Sadikov's, like, 28 or something like that. And just fucking, you know, won that third round easily. And in my opinion, it was a very easy draw to call. And the right call to make was the draw, you know. And you see in the cage afterwards, both guys like hugging it out, dapping each other up and doing the Borshov has that dance that he does after every fight. Nazem started it off and then Borshov finished it. So both guys, you know, put their heart and soul into that fight. And the draw was the right call, you know. Usually when these things happen, I like to see people want to see a rematch. I don't think it's necessary for this fight. I think both guys, their stock goes up from this fight and they should just keep going down their path. And they'll probably meet each other again further down the line. They're both young fighters in this division. I mean, Borshev's a little bit older, but he's young in fight years. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see this fight happening in a main event in a couple of years, you know. But it was fucking awesome.
Yeah, on prelims. I can see that. That is the only way you can placate me with a draw. Because every time I hear a draw, I'm like, just let them. You guys are already there. There's the
round. Do another round,
just
right?
Say, let's bring it back one more time, and then you have it all over. It's everything. Everybody wins, except for the guy that loses.
Yeah, no, I mean, the fight was just such a treat. I didn't care what the score was, you know?
Yeah, I will say that the last, like, two draws that I've seen have been like, all right, that's good, good. I'm okay with y'all, like, leaving.
Yeah, wasn't there one last week?
Yeah, it was, God, who the fuck was it? But it was, like, one guy was, like, it looked like one dude was...
Oh, or not Fakhradino.
Exactly. Dude, that was. So, I mean, at least the draws are getting a little bit more entertaining.
Yeah, those draws, both of those made sense. You know, one fighter wins two rounds, and then the other fighter wins the other round huge. So, that just, mathematically, it makes sense. You know what I mean? The Alexa Grasso one was a tough one. That was one that I was like, I don't know. But that fight was super close, too, so I wasn't upset about the draw either. But let's continue moving down the card. We had Jared Gordon get it done against Mark Mattson. I picked him with supreme confidence on the preview pod, Jared Gordon. But I didn't think it was going to look like this. I thought, you know, Mattson was going to have some success with the wrestling in the first two rounds and completely expend his energy. And Jared Gordon would take over second half of the second round and finish him in the third or win a very easy decision, 29-28. Instead, what we got was Mark Mattson not able to take down Jared Gordon and forced to use a dirty boxing game in the clinch, which was really fun to watch, honestly. He was pushing the clinch positions and landing some nice like uppercuts and body shots from there. And he pushed a pace that he couldn't keep, man. He does this every fucking time, Mark Mattson. And I know he only has like the two losses on his record. But I feel like we've, you know, how many times we have to teach you this lesson, old man? You know what I mean? The dude comes out super hot every fight, and then every third round he looks like shit. And in this fight, he couldn't get to there because his, you know, he already started to get tired because he pushed such a hard pace. And Jared Gordon's not the guy you want to push the pace against. He's the guy who pushes the pace against you, you know? And Gordon was able to, you know, at first the dirty boxing was giving him trouble. That clinch striking was giving him trouble. But Gordon was able to stay composed and land a beautiful uppercut in the clinch off of he grabbed Mark Mattson's wrist with two hands and threw it to the side and landed an uppercut off of that. And it was very beautifully timed. It hurt him bad. And then he pushed him back to the fence and landed a nice elbow over the top. And I think a right hand. And that's what put down Mattson in a very comical KO. If I might add, the way he fell was pretty funny. I mean, you know, I don't mean to make light of the dude getting knocked out, but just the way he fell, he looked like the wacky wavy inflatable arm tube man, you know. He kind of like everything like exploded, you know, and he fell down like that. But you know, it is what it is. A big comeback victory from Jared Gordon, considering where he's been these last couple fights with that robbery loss to
Paddy Pimblett.
Yeah, to Paddy Pimblett, and then the clash of heads that ended up in a no contest against Bobby Green. So awesome to see Gordon get back in the winning column in a very legit victory with no controversy. I'm happy for the guy. I think he's got a lot of potential in this division still. Even at the ripe age of 35, he definitely seems to be adding more tools to his game. So yeah, I'm happy for him. You know, Mark Mattson, on the other hand, you know, maybe take a couple more fights. Obviously, I think he's never going to be able to sniff a title shot or anything like that, given his cardio issues and, you know, his recent skid. But that being said, you know, he can still make a lot of money in this game as an Olympian. So, you know, stay in there, champ. You know what I mean? I think he's got a couple more fights here in the UFC. John Castaneda versus Kyung Ho Kong was a very exciting fight, too. Castaneda just fought such a smart fight, dude. Like, the leg kicks, the straight punches. He really put it all together and was able to neutralize the usually dangerous and wild Kyung Ho Kong. So, good performance there from Castaneda. Joshua Van versus Kevin Borges. If the Nazeem Sadikov fight didn't happen, this would have been my pick for fight of the night. It was a very exciting flyweight matchup where Borges looked like he was going to finish Van in the first round. And then Van just comes back and puts the beat down on him in the next two rounds and wins that fight pretty convincingly. Another super smart performance, just like that Castaneda fight, where he uses leg kicks, he uses wrestling, he used every tool in the mixed martial arts tool belt to get the victory there. And huge performance from Joshua Van. I'm really excited to see how he develops in this division because he seems like a very well-rounded fighter. And I think he's only like 22 or something like that. So dude's got a lot of ceiling here. I'd like to see him, you know, move up the ranks a bit. I don't know. I mean, it's a little early for him to get like a fight like this, but I think down the line, if we see him fight somebody like Muhammad Makhachev, I think that'd be an awesome matchup, you know, two very well-rounded fighters there at flyweight. And then Jamal Emmers was able to smoke Dennis Bazuka in about under a minute. I felt bad for this man. I like Dennis. He's a good guy. And, you know, he trains out of New York with Nazim and Aljo and all those guys, Matt Frivola. But Jamal Emmers, I thought he was going to win. You know, I thought it would be a lot more of a drawn out technical performance. But if you can knock the dude out in a minute, why not? You know what I mean? If you land that shot that hurts him like that, you know, you might as well follow it up and get that TKO. And that's exactly what he did. So good performance there from Emmers. Awesome card overall. So many finishes, and the fights that went the distance were either really exciting or very technical and close and competitive. So that was great. You know what I mean? For me, card of the year, for sure. I might be biased because it's in New York, but and some of my favorite fighters won, but it was a really exciting card, front to back, and I'm really happy that we were able to see that, you know, in this day and age where a lot of UFC cards feel watered down. It was awesome to get a card like that that delivers on every front. Speaking of watered down UFC cards, let's talk about next week's Apex fight night. We're going back to the Apex, baby. No crowd, no fun. We're gonna see Brendan Allen versus
people throwing meat sticks at each other.
Yep, big old sloppy meat boys slapping meat together. We got Brendan Allen versus Paul Craig, and a pretty interesting matchup, honestly. That and the co-main event. And the fight before that are pretty interesting. The rest of the card, not so much. So let's talk about the good, you know. Brendan Allen versus Paul Craig. Paul Craig coming down from light heavyweight. I gave him no shot in his fight against Andre Muniz, and he was able to get the finish there. I think it was even a submission. So huge feather in the cap to submit Andre Muniz. It was a TKO. That's what it was. Yeah, he beat him up with the elbows. Yeah. But... you know, big victory there for Paul Craig. He was able to win a lot of those grappling exchanges. And, you know, the dude's obviously a very talented grappler. His striking leaves a lot to be desired, but he might be able to get away with it a little bit at this weight class because he is a big, strong dude. Maybe he can land some power punches against Brendan Allen. We'll see. Brendan Allen, on the other hand, super well-rounded. Probably like one of those, you know, MMA prototypes that started with MMA. And kind of just well-rounded his game as the years went on. Allen's a guy that we've seen grow up in the octagon. I think he's only like 28 right now. Yeah, 27. And, you know, we've seen him really grow up in the octagon. You know, you've seen him add tools to his game fight by fight, which was really interesting to see the progression there. So when he started off, he was kind of just like a grappler with a nice like arm triangle and stuff like that. And then, you know, you see him slowly start to add these parts to his game. You see him start to land some more jabs and straights. His boxing started to look a lot better. You see him start to land that body kick that he loves now. He added that tool to his game. And most recently against Andre Muniz, he added he's always been a good grappler, but he added a very strong anti-wrestling game. And now he's on a 3-fight submission streak against 3 guys in the division who are pretty tough to beat, you know, Jotko, Muniz, and Bruno Silva. The Jacob Malkoon fight was a lot closer than I wanted it to be. I thought Malkoon won that fight, honestly. But Brendan Allen has been steadily improving in this division. Now he draws Paul Craig, who is a one-dimensional fighter. But I don't know if the odds are right in this one, man. They have Paul Craig at a plus 330. And like I said, Allen is super well-rounded. He's a very smart fighter. I just don't know. I feel like Paul Craig can finish anybody, you know. He'll get beat up for the whole fight and then throw up a triangle in the last second like he did to Magomed Ankalaev and be the lone loss on that guy's record. You know what I mean? He can come back from any position, and once he gets his legs around your head, you're going to sleep, you know. Against Nikita Krylov, he had an awesome comeback. So I don't know, man. 5 rounds is going to be very interesting to see Paul Craig in. He's never been in a 5-round fight. Brendan Allen has multiple 5-round fights outside of the UFC and like the RFA or the LFA, I forget which one, but so he has that 5-round experience. I think as the fight goes on, it'll probably play into Brendan Allen's favor, but again, Paul Craig just needs one exchange to land something nice. But in all, put it all like the, you know, odds aside and everything, if Brendan Allen fights his fight, he should be able to beat Paul Craig here. He should be able to stay on the outside, land some better strikes, keep him from getting into some heavy grappling exchanges. We saw him have some great submission defense, like I said, against Andre Muniz. So I expect him to pull that feather out of the cap for this one, or the rabbit out of the cap, rather. And, fight a smart fight, and he should be able to win this fight comfortably. What do you think, Jordan?
I don't know, man. This fight card has a lot of guys that I don't really know a whole lot about.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, there's not a lot of big names on this card in general. Give me one second. Yeah, not a lot of big names on this card. There are a couple exciting matchups, though. Let's talk about that co-main event real quick. They got Jake Matthews versus Michael Morales. Michael Morales, Peruvian fellow, I believe he's Peruvian. Yeah, he's solid, man. He's had some good fights. 24,
too. Look at that. That might be a prospect right there.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, he's one to watch in this division. The dude has had some pretty solid performances so far in the UFC. His big tool that I've noticed for sure is his boxing game. His boxing is very clean. I believe he's from Peru, if I'm not mistaken. No, Ecuador. Okay. But yeah, coming off a victory over Max Griffin, and he's had some other pretty solid wins for, you know, being in the UFC for so long. He finished Adam Fugit. He finished Trevin Giles. You know, not an easy guy to finish. So the dude has some good success here in the UFC early. And when he first came in, I was like, damn, this guy is fucking good. Like, you know what I mean? Super, like, dominant on the feet. Seems to be smart on the ground, too. Like, when the fight does go to the ground, he seems to know what he's doing down there. Maybe not a submission threat, but definitely, one to watch for, you know? I don't know if he's ready for this fight. Jake Matthews is a guy, he's 29 years old, but he's had so many fights at the highest level. I'm really not sure who to pick here, but the odds have Matthews as a huge underdog, so I think I'm going to throw a little bit down on Matthews. Like, if you tell me that Matthews, this fight finishes and Matthews wins a close decision, I don't think it's that crazy. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't seem that, like, far-fetched, you know? Matthews has a very well-rounded game as well. Started off as a grappler and developed his striking as the years went on. Now he's really taking a liking to that boxing game. He did get beat in his last fight, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's coming off of a loss. No, okay, he had a win against Darian Flowers, but before that, he lost to Semelsberger in a fight where he was kind of just getting punched around. But, you know, he loses to these dudes that are, like, exceptional. You know, he lost to Sean Brady, he lost to Semelsberger, he lost to Tony Martin, Kevin Lee earlier in his career. A lot of big names on there. You know, I think Mike Morales may be developing into one of those names for sure. I don't know if it's too much too soon, though. You know, we'll find out. The reach and the height are certainly on Morales' side. He's huge for the weight class. So, you know, that's going to be a natural tool in there for him. Matthews, I think he's even fought at lightweight in the past. So I don't think Morales could ever make lightweight unless he chopped off a leg or something. So that might be a big factor, bigger than I'm making it out to be. But I just feel like Matthews might be a little bit slicker in there. And I think as the fight goes on, he's going to find more paths to victory. But Morales certainly could, you know, just box his socks off and, you know, keep him at arm's length and get the victory there. But yeah, pretty close fight there. I'm not really sure who to pick. I'm going to put a little bit on Matthews, though, just for the odds. Next fight is, by all intents and purposes, a very memeable fight. This is Chase Hooper versus Jordan Leavitt. You know, you take away all the bullshit, all the, you know, social media presence and, you know, like memes and everything, the jokes that these two can put out. And you have a couple of really talented grapplers. I think Leavitt has the more methodical jiu-jitsu game. He likes to take people down with a single leg, work the half guard, step over for an arm triangle, that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? If you give up your back, he'll take it. Chase Hooper, on the other hand, is a little bit more of a flowy grappler. He'll kind of scramble and, you know, kind of has that funk in him, similar to like Ben Askren. Kind of looks like him too. But yeah, similar to Ben Askren in that he'll find the funk in positions that you don't expect. He'll like grab a neck and end up with a choke from like a back crucifix and stuff like that. Like, the dude's got very creative jiu-jitsu on the ground. And he's developing his striking at an alarming rate, dude. Like, I mean, he was training with the Thompson family, Stephen Thompson and Ray Thompson, his dad. And he added some really cool kicks to his game a couple fights ago. And then in his most recent performance, he threw out like 500 strikes or something over three rounds. It was fucking crazy. The dude pushed at an insane pace. And as somebody that we saw early in his UFC career be very chinny and easy to hit and have bad defense and seem slow and plodding on the feet, that last fight he was very confident, moved forward, landed some good combinations, and, you know, maybe chinny's the wrong word, I should say he had bad defense, because he would take those shots and keep moving forward like a zombie. And he still has that durability, but now he has better defense and he can hit a lot harder and, you know, is more confident in his striking, which I think is going to be a huge tool in this fight against Jordan Leavitt. Jordan Leavitt, on the other hand, does not have a lot of confidence in his striking. He does have a good one too, but he's very pillow fisted. So I think if Leavitt wants to win this fight, he has to make it a boring fight. He has to, you know, push Chase against the fence, you know, kind of use his physicality, because Chase is a bigger dude, but, you know, kind of make it an ugly fight. You know what I mean? It's not going to be pretty if Jordan Leavitt wins this one. Or, you know, maybe catch Hooper in some kind of submission or transitional position where Hooper can't get out, and then get the finish that way. But I do expect Leavitt, if he's going to win by decision. Hooper, on the other hand, can get the finish in a multitude of ways in this fight. But I don't know. I just think Hooper has more tools right now, and I'm gonna pick Hooper. I like Leavitt a lot. I just don't know if he's going to be able to get it done, man. It's a tough fight for him. Honestly, there's not that many other fights on this card that I want to talk about. Amanda Ribas is coming back, which is pretty cool. Joannison Brito is fighting, which is pretty cool. On the prelims too, the early prelims, Lucy Pudilova versus Alan Perez is a very exciting matchup. I like Lucy Pudilova a lot. She's great striking, great Muay Thai, and she's adding that jiu-jitsu to her game. Alan Perez, on the other hand, is a strong wrestler. So that's a pretty interesting stylistic matchup. I'm going to be watching that for sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, after such an awesome card last week, I don't really mind taking a week off, so to speak. You know, we'll see what happens in the main event and the co-main event. I think those are the two fights to really take away from this card. But
you never know, man. How many times have we said that, and then we are here again next week saying Jesus Christ?
Damn. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that there's just not a lot of divisional weight on this card. You know what I mean? Nobody's getting a title shot if they win here. Nobody's getting a top five fight if they win here. So it's just kind of, it feels low stakes. You know what I mean? That being said, we might look at this kind of card in a few years and be like, wow, look at how many future champions and contenders were on this card. You know what I mean? But yeah, let's go through the betting slip. If you have one, Jordan, what do you got for this card?
Nah, I'm just going to watch it this week, man.
Yeah, I think that's a good bet. I mean, honestly, I don't. There's not much that really jumps off the page to me. What time does it start this week? I think it's 8 o'clock, something like that. It's relatively early. What I am going to do is I'm going to round robin the underdogs on this card: Paul Craig, Jake Matthews, and Jordison Brito. I think all those guys have a chance of winning. Lucy Podolova as well. I'm just going to round robin them and, you know, see what happens. It is what it is. You know what I mean? I'm not really confident in either one of those dudes to lose or win. So the fights are a lot closer than the odds say in my eyes. And yeah, we'll see if we can get something done that way. Last week, we made a shit ton of money. If you guys followed, I hope you guys followed, because pretty much all of our picks were right. The only thing we got wrong was the Dern fight. Everything else was solid. So yeah, hopefully we can keep the ball rolling, y'all. I appreciate you for listening. Thank you so much. Stay tuned for more content. We're coming with some medium form content down the line, and we're going to keep pumping out shorts and long form for you guys. And yeah, thank you so much for the support, y'all. Take it easy. All right. All right, I'm going to shit my brains out.